We had the Cold War. How about a shadow war? Hi, I'm Scott Ott with Stephen Green and Bill Whittle, and this Right Angle is brought to you by the members at BillWhittle.com. Gentlemen, there is a national security analyst at CNN whose name I'm going to mispronounce, Jim Sciutto, S-C-I-U-T-T-O, who has written a book called The Shadow War, Inside Russia and China's Secret Operations to Defeat America. And Bill Whittle, frankly, this topic caught my attention because of a recent episode of your Firewall show where you talked about the multidimensional aspects of warfare. And mm-hmm. I'm reading this article about this book, and he is talking about Russia and China, but specifically with Russia. He says, Russia's military preparations continue. In outer space, Russia has deployed weapons designed to damage or destroy U.S. satellites, two new classes of attack and ballistic missile submarines that are harder to track. They've invaded and occupied territory of sovereign nations. And of course, we all know about the Mueller report, which fleshed out the efforts using cyber warfare to mess up the 2016 presidential elections. Bill, let's start with you. And frankly, I'm going to ask the same question of each one of you. First of all, do you buy the idea that Russia and for that matter, China, which is doing much the same thing, are actually engaged in a shadow war against the United States? And if so, if you're in a position to do something about it, what do you do?
Well, of course they are. Yeah. I mean, of course they are. We have somewhere in a shelf someplace, there's a detailed plan for the United States invasion of Great Britain. So it's only a question of how warm is the kettle, you know, in terms of where you're looking. We have contingency plans for every single square foot on the earth. So the question is, should we be taking this seriously? Yes, of course we should. The bigger issue is how far is Vladimir Putin want to push this thing? He basically invaded Georgia in 2008, right at the peak of the election, got some serious sanctions slapped on him for that. Same thing with the Ukraine, more sanctions. My wife is Russian, so I know that these sanctions actually have some pretty big bite in terms of the day-to-day lives of day-to-day Russians. Whether it affects the military or not, I don't much know. The first thing my wife ever said about Vladimir Putin was that he loves Russia. He just doesn't like Russians very much. And I think you could pretty much sum up his policies in a nutshell. I suspect, however, that what Putin is doing is he's playing of, I don't want to call it brinksmanship. It's a strategy, and I think he's playing his hand pretty well. The hand that Putin basically was given was after several years of Boris Yeltsin, Russia was simply just laughed at. I mean, they'd be G7 meetings and they'd be asked to sit out in the hallway kind of thing. You know, they're just really humiliating. The entire country basically fell apart. The Soviet Navy just sat in a dry dock and nuclear submarines rusting away back into the ocean. And he inherited, from the Russian point of view, a very daunting hand. I've heard it said anecdotally, not from my wife, but from people more highly placed than that, that Vladimir Putin said that the only two Russians he despises are Nicholas II and Mikhail Gorbachev, because they both threw power away. That sounds about right. Yeah. So what you got is you've got a guy who once owned half the planet and had a military that was the worry of the world. And he inherited rusted out, non-functioning equipment, Army and Navy and Air Force that haven't been paid in years. And I suspect what he's doing is he is posturing himself as extremely dangerous. Don't mess with me. We've got all these new weapons and we're doing this and we're doing that and we're ready to go at a moment's notice. So you better not mess with us, which is what I would be doing if I wanted to buy some more time to rebuild. We need to remember, by the way, that that Russia's economy is not even in the top 10. I mean, our defense budget is certainly bigger than their total economy is, and to that degree, I think, you know, that puts these things in some perspective. I know I tend to run on, but I think probably the most important thing to understand about our relationship with Russia is that psychologically we are the inverse of each other. And this is why they don't understand us, and we see what they're doing, and we don't really understand them. When I say that we're the inverse of each other, Russia has been invaded for its entire history. And within the last 2-3 centuries, both Napoleon and Hitler went into that country, laid waste to the entire nation, 20 million people killed, civilians probably in World War II, maybe another 20 million soldiers. My grandfather-in-law was killed on probably day 2 or day 3 of World War II on the Russian border when the German soldiers, German army came swooping in. So for Russia, the acquisition of land is an act of safety for them. They don't see it as an act of aggression. Having the buffer states of Poland and Ukraine and all these other things, these are just as necessary for survival. And so they can't understand that the United States is not interested in conquering territory, because their territory has been conquered their whole lives. And likewise for us now, protected by two big oceans, we completely lack the kind of appropriate paranoia that Russia has developed over the years of having its land just tromped all over. Russia's the boundary between the East and the West, and we aren't invaded in this country. Don't have to fear invasion in this country. And so we look at things that Russia may do and say these are extremely aggressive acts and extremely paranoid and militaristic acts. We see them through the filter of a country that doesn't fear invasion and never has. And so they can't make any sense out of our motives, and we have a hard time making sense out of theirs too. It's not to justify any of this stuff, don't get me wrong, but I think if you understand the history of the country and where they're coming from, it puts a fair amount of the saber rattling in a little better perspective.
Well, Stephen Green, what Bill points out there is interesting, because for years, this author of this new book, The Shadow War, maintains that the United States and frankly, all Western civilizations have underestimated Russian hostility against us and have engaged in what Bill pointed out in a recent episode of another show we did here, is called mirroring, essentially imagining that the Russians, or for that matter, the Chinese, want what the United States wants. They want to be drawn into this rules-based international order, but the leaders in Russia and China want nothing of the sort.
Yeah, they see the rules as pinning them down rather than enriching them, which is what it does for us.
Yeah, and so we can't imagine that, and I don't know how you engage in, let's call it a war of sorts, how do you engage in a war when you can't even imagine the mindset of your adversary?
You know, it's interesting that you use the word imagine so many times in your question, because while Bill was speaking, I kept thinking about our lack of imagination. And this isn't to say, oh, we're stupid, dull people or anything like that. But we already have all of these advantages. We have the strategic advantages of having two big moats on each side, the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans. We have the advantage of having for neighbors countries much smaller and weaker than we are, Mexico and Canada. We have the advantage of what is still largely a free economy that is this amazing wealth-producing machine, where we can spend, I think it's about 4.5% of GDP on defense, and just... that's like half the defense spending in the whole world. I mean, that's how rich we are. We don't spend that much, and the amount in terms of GDP, but it's still just a massive amount. So we're pretty happy with the way things are. We set up this rules-based international order after World War II. We built this on the ashes of Europe and East Asia, and we built it to suit our needs, which is built on a string of alliances to keep communism contained, and now Russia and China, and on free trade amongst friendly powers, which has just done nothing but enrich us and Japan and Western Europe. China's another case. I'm not going to get into a whole trade war argument with them, but I'll just say we've let too much of our technology stack go to China and leave it at that. So we haven't had to use a whole lot of imagination. We took the post-war order and codified it, and that was good for us. Russia, on the other hand, as Bill mentioned, has a very weak hand, and Putin plays it very well. He is an imaginative player. He has to be, because he doesn't have all of these natural advantages, and so he has to use his imagination to probe for where we're weak, to take an advantage, even if it seems temporary or stupid, such as he's done in Georgia and in eastern Ukraine. And again, this isn't to excuse anything Putin's done. I think he's a bad guy, and in many ways he's reckless, and he and his cronies have impoverished that country. They've robbed it absolutely blind. So if we get rid of Putin tomorrow, I would love that. But I have finally been disillusioned in this idea I've had for a long time that we can fully welcome Russia into the rest of Western civilization. It's not going to happen. I fell in love with this idea in the last days of the Soviet Union when I think it was a writer for Newsweek proposed what he called the Pax Americanus Soveticus. This remarkable thing happened in the lead up to the first Gulf War in 1991, and that was the Soviet Union voted with us on the UN resolution to expel Iraq from Kuwait. This had never happened. And talk about this could have been an amazing thing if the two huge superpowers, the United States and the Soviet Union, could enforce a world peace. But of course it wasn't to be. And then we had the comic opera Boris Yeltsin, who just let the country languish for a decade. And now we've got Vladimir Putin, who really doesn't want to be a part of the West, and I'm afraid it's just never going to happen. I thought maybe there was a chance early in Putin's first term when Bush brought him into the World Trade Organization, or tried to. I can't remember if it went through or not. And I thought, wow, maybe Russia's really ready for it this time, but clearly not. And the one thing I'd like to talk about, our lack of imagination has helped to cause this in one small way. It was my theory that at the end of the Cold War, that NATO should have thrown a huge victory party in 1991 and then disbanded. We should have kept our military contacts with Germany and France and Britain and Italy and Turkey, of course, because we're friends and we should stay friends. But this idea of a defensive alliance with nobody to defend against is stupid. And then when we expanded NATO, again, it's this lack of imagination. Oh, NATO was good. Bigger NATO, better. Except wrong. Expanding NATO to the borders of the old Soviet Union, and in the case of the Baltic republics, inside the borders of the old Soviet Union, has done nothing but to feed Russian paranoia and to embolden and encourage Putin and all of his bad behavior. So if we're going to fight China and Russia, again, in the shadows, I don't want a shooting war with anybody, we're going to have to learn to become a lot more imaginative, because that's what they use against us.
Just one thing, just real fast. You're talking about shadowing, mirroring rather. A useful thing to do is just to imagine that we switch jerseys out there, and imagine a world where we have one jump ramp carrier, where airplanes can take off but they can't carry much of a bomb load, and the Russians have 11 nuclear powered carrier strike groups that can be deployed anywhere around the world, and we are taking Nimitz class aircraft carriers out of service after an amazing and astonishing 50 years, and replacing them with better stuff. You know, Ford class carriers now with F-35s on the deck. It's so easy to see, oh, threat over here, threat over there. But as Ulysses S. Grant pointed out, you know, you can be really terrified of the enemy, and you finally come over the hill and you find out the guy's run away. Sometimes he's more scared of you than you are of him.
Well, and I think that's when Steve was talking about how Putin has to be imaginative because he lives in this kind of a hostile world. The hostile world is mostly between his ears and in between the ears of the Chinese leadership. They really live in a world of 100 years ago or 150 years ago, where everybody was a threat. As you know, as Bill has pointed out on previous episodes, you know, democratic countries don't attack each other. And so if you come from that atmosphere, it's kind of like growing up in a poor area of the inner city where you constantly have to be watching your back and you constantly have to be fighting. And then you somehow wind up getting a scholarship to an Ivy League university, but you never stop behaving as if you constantly have to be fighting and watching your back. The mirroring is more than just mirroring that we're engaged in. It's really projection. It's kind of a welcoming attitude that the United States has that basically says, it's not that I think that the Russians think just like we do. It's that I welcome you to join us in this world of peace and harmony and prosperity and trade and in places where, you know, the only attacks we're planning in the Pentagon regarding the Russian Federation is attacks that are retaliatory in case we get struck. There's nobody in our government who's thinking, geez, let's come up with a plan to take over Russia. There's nobody who's plotting to take down China. There's nothing but goodwill toward the people of China and toward the people of Russia. And we're really just waiting for them to come to the point where they realize that they can drop their fists and they can extend their hands and they will be welcomed with open arms. Now, you may think that that's naivete on the part of a stupid American, and certainly it is. And by stupid, I mean me. But the reality is the world has moved ahead. It's not that we're without sin or that we're without avarice or that we're without, a tendency toward violence and toward greed and taking what belongs to other people. But we figured out other ways to get what we want. And so we figured out, like, a marketing campaign's a lot more fun than the Battle of the Somme, you know? So we enjoy doing everything. Stuff like that, you know? And you can hear it in business where we use militaristic rhetoric to describe what we're doing in business. I'm like, you boys don't understand what you're talking about, you know? We have morphed into a society that is essentially built around fun games that we do to entertain ourselves and for profit. And we are dealing with some people specifically in the governments of Russia and China who still think that their very survival, their lives depend upon their ability to deliver crippling blows to their enemies. There are some of those enemies still out there, but we're not those people. And I know that we can't get Russia to stop thinking the way it does, but I would wager that the vast majority of the Russian people have had enough of war. They've had enough of slaughter. They've had enough of having people that they love dying in the snow and being raped and being sent to gulags. There is a world that they've seen through the internet that really exists and in which we live. And we revel. And so we've got to kind of keep that combination of, I guess it's kind of a Ronald Reagan foreign policy that I would recommend, which is essentially to go up and say to the Russians, hey, you know, I'd really like to be your friend, so don't make me kick your ass. For Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, I'm Scott Ott. Thanks to the members at BillWhittle.com for making this possible.